White Sox fans, it is Tuesday, April 9th. If you are tuning in live, you were just probably witness to the White Sox second win of the season early in 2024. White Sox now stand at 2-9, and we were treated to a bevy of emotions tonight. As you guys will notice, as I said, if you're tuning in live, you see that my regular co-host, Nick Murawski, is not with us today as he has some family obligations that he needs to take care of. But I am happy to welcome back future Sox's very own Elijah Evans to the show. Good evening, Elijah. How you doing, man?
What's going on, Danny? I appreciate you having me today in Nick's place. Obviously, I am not Nick, but I'm looking forward to talking a little bit of ball. I'm used to doing the minor league stuff. I know we're probably going to end up talking about that anyways. But at the same time, it is fun, I guess, to talk about the White Sox. I'm looking forward to talking with you at least.
Yeah, we'll definitely have some fun. At least we have a White Sox winner to talk about tonight. It has been exactly 1 week since the White Sox won their first game of the season. Now they have one home win and one road win. You know, it looks as though if they're only going to win once a week and, you know, they're going to do it on Tuesdays, maybe, you know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or a superstitious kind of guy, but,
you got to get back on, know, man. Multiple.
Maybe
times.
I might just have to start doing shows every day the White Sox play and see how that goes. Maybe we can rip off 8 or 9 or so. God. And I say that tongue in cheek, by the way, because, man, historically bad offensively. What do you think, brother?
It's been rough, right? I mean, I think we knew it was going to be rough to an extent. I think that was kind of a given. And then when you lose, you know, Eloy last week, Luis a few days ago, and then tonight Moncada, right? Like, I don't know what else there is to expect right now. Like, I don't think there's really anything else you can say is like the expectation at this point, right? Like, it is what it is, right? That's kind of the way I look at it. I think it's just a waste for a lot of people to be in that train of thought of like, you know, everything's terrible, the world's coming down, all that stuff. And then I get that's the instant reaction, but at the same time, like, let's just say it is what it is, right? We knew this was going to happen. It's a little worse than we expected, right? But it's like, this is the reality.
Yeah, indeed. You know, you don't ever want to see the guys that are considered, you know, the top two or three guys on your 26 man roster go down this early in the season, especially when we were kind of hoping for bounce back years from at least two out of the three. You know, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Yoan Moncada being in a contract year, and Eloy, you know, maybe hopefully finally getting healthy. Excuse me, I'm fighting a little something here. And then, you know, of course, everybody was kind of hoping that Luis Robert could at least duplicate his season from last year. And, you know, maybe even take another step and put himself into that MVP conversation. But here we are. We have three of our top guys going down. But again, you know, I'd rather start the show on a positive note. Let's talk about this win tonight a little bit. Yeah. And then we can kind of get into what everybody's really chomping at the bit to talk about when we get into the injuries and, you know, some of the other things that are going on in the White Sox organization. So, you know, first off, I want to start with the first inning of this game. It was something to behold as a White Sox fan when, you know, we're talking about a team that going into tonight had only scored 16 runs in its first 10 games of the season. Right. So, you know, that's what I talk about when I say historically low. You know, they were either at the bottom or in the, you know, the bottom three in nearly every offensive category, you know, coming into this game. And then we get this offensive breakout with a lineup that a lot of folks were like, what is this garbage that we're putting in there? We got a bunch of guys that, you know, aren't supposed to be everyday players going out there. We even feature, you know, Lenin Sosa in the three hole. And boy, did they come out, man. I mean, they were taking pitches. They were taking walks. They were waiting for hittable pitches. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, pick your brain on what you saw tonight from those guys and how you felt about that.
It was cool, right? I mean, everybody had the same reaction seeing the lineup earlier. It was like, this is the lineup we're running out on the like 11th day of the season. Are we serious right now? Like, I expected Sosa to get some, like, oh man, this is ridiculous. This is like the ultimate white flag lineup right here. But then they came out and they looked good, right? It was a solid game. They came out and they jumped on it. 5 runs in the first, you know, Lenin Sosa with a nice hit. Corey Lee had some good at bats tonight. Andrew Vaughn finally with his first 2-hit game of the season, I believe. And just generally, you know, an offensive approach that looked pretty good. Again, most of it was in the first inning. Dom Fletcher came through with that big hit, though, to win the game later on. So, you know, Fletcher is in the last few games showing some nice signs. I'm liking what I've seen from him, at least in the past few days, just because that's a guy who I have penciled as like one of the few players where it's like he could become a part of the future on this roster, you know. So we'll see what happens with that. But generally, like, offense early was something we have not seen, and that was nice to see. At the very least, like, that was just fun to watch. And then, you know, Soroka was okay, but there was some good things from the bullpen for sure. Leisure was great, Kopech was great, right? So there was definitely some positive signs. I saw Kopech at 102 today, Danny, which is pretty awesome. I've been preaching that move to the bullpen for kind of the longest, and it just makes all the sense in the world. I mean, the guy, that's, speaking of hot takes, like, I think there's a chance Kopech becomes like a legit closer this season the way he looks right now. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but some good things today, and it's nice to watch a baseball game that was like pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, well, you know, you brought up a couple of things there that you know, I really wanted to touch on, you know, especially Jordan Leisure. I mean, the guy coming up and doing things as, you know, a rookie in this organization. We were excited about him when he came over in that deadline deal last year. I mean, he just looks filthy, right? I mean, the guy's got stuff and he commands it well. And then of course you got Michael Kopech that you brought up as well too, who, you know, we've all had questions about his ability to throw strikes. Tonight he came out firing. I mean, he wasn't wild and all over the place. And I think of all the pitches he threw in the six out save that he got tonight, all of them were heaters except for that one fastball. And I know you were saying that, you know, hot takes, you know, and Nick and I have had this conversation before, but you know, you and I talked the other day when I asked if somebody could help me co-host tonight in Nick's absence. And you said, you'll bring some hot takes for us. And as I've said with Nick, you know, I bring you guys on to kind of, you know, keep me on the level, because I provide all the hot takes and the heaters for everybody here on the show. So it's always good to have a level head in here. And then, you know, of course, be able to talk about the minors. Ian and I doing our thing with White Sox Daily. You know, we talked about the MLB club and also, you know, the affiliates and the prospects that we wanted to keep an eye on. It's just nice to be able to finally, you know, sit down and do that and not have to focus on, you know, just on the Major League Ball Club. And I think, you know, one of the reasons that I was brought over to take on this MLB show for Future Sox and its inception here in 2024 was, you know, why not? We're following these guys from, you know, whether it's low A all the way up to, you know, Triple A Charlotte, and once they graduate to the MLB club, why do we have to stop covering them, right? So it's nice to be able to sit down and talk with you, because I know you have a pretty good handle on what's going on down there at the affiliates, and I'm gonna pick your brain a little bit on that tonight. But yeah, all in all, great. Just great pitching for the most part. Like you said, Soroka was okay. He did enough to keep the White Sox in it. The bullpen really kind of seemed to nail it down tonight, and you know, some key type offense. So
yeah, I think I'm ready for the Tim Hill experience to be over, maybe. But beyond that, the rest of the bullpen was excellent. I think, I mean, Leisure throwing two innings is something he didn't even really do at all last year. So seeing him get, you know, two full innings of work under his belt was awesome. And then Kopech with a two inning save, right? It's exciting. It's cool to see at least some pieces that are like, oh, those guys could be in the bullpen for a while, right? Like, that's something that I think coming into the year, it was unsure if Leisure would make the roster. Kopech still seemed like he was a starter coming into spring training, right? And then Stephen Wilson acquired in that Cease trade, right? So those are three guys that weren't even penciled in the bullpen necessarily and beginning of March, right? And now those are the three key pieces of the bullpen at this point.
Right. And you know, again, this early in the season, to be seeing those guys be some of the biggest contributors is, I don't know if it's alarming or if it's awesome or if it's a little bit of both, but, you know, that is the state of White Sox roster construction at the moment. But I'm glad to see that we're getting a lot of production out of our younger guys. Because, you know, again, it seems like we are going to be in need of some guys to, oh, I hate to use that word or this phrase, but the the next man mentality. They got to start going to have to step up because we are going to miss some time from some folks here, obviously, you know. So, I tried to start the show off on a little bit of a positive note, talk about, you know, the win tonight and how everything looked. And it was great to be able to see some guys come through early on. And then, you know, again, Dominic Fletcher to secure the win later on, or at least take the lead while Michael Kopech went out there and secured the win. But I have to address one of the comments in the chat here. Trey says he thought they'd blow it tonight. And, you know, I can't fault him for feeling that way because, you know, as we've seen going into tonight, this White Sox team has been absolutely atrocious. But Elijah says he saw some things, you know, Dominic Fletcher's bats coming alive. I feel like the approach for some of these players has looked a little bit better. And I have to ask you, you know, the injuries. Thanks, Beef. I appreciate that. The Sox are pretty good since I'm not ripping a heater right now. You know, Beef and I actually had a conversation, very short conversation, the night of the night before opening day when they did their thing with Sox Machine over at the Remova Theater. And I told him I was trying to cut back a little bit. So I'm doing that. And, you know, some of you guys in the chat know to my triggers. If I'm not really paying attention to as much to the chat as I normally do, that's why, because I'm trying to keep my triggers down. But, you know, it's always easier to do a show with a White Sox winner. So, anywho, as I was talking about bringing up, you know, the positives, we do have some injury stuff to talk about. And, you know, since I have you on, Elijah, and I know that you are familiar with a lot of what's going on down at the affiliates, we did see that Oscar Colas got pulled from the game earlier tonight. And, of course, Brian Ramos is the only other infielder on the 40-man. You want to tell us your thoughts on the 40-man, how it's constructed? Where do you think things are going to go? And what happens if we see another injury somewhere as far as position players go?
I talked about it with Jeff Cohen yesterday on the roundup a little bit, just because it's the 40 man's a little bit of a mess, and it's in this situation where it's kind of pigeonholed in a way where they don't really have an out here unless you try to make some moves. Because when you look at the depth chart, right, you've got some pitchers on the 40 man that just simply aren't major league ready. A Jake Eater, you know, some of those Jairo Hiriarte, right? Those are guys that you aren't DFAing. You need them around, and they have to be on the 40 man, but they're not going to be in the bigs, right? So your only real, like, big league maybe ready guy would be a Bailey Horn potentially if you need a bullpen arm. Beyond that, right, like, it's Nastrini, but he's not on the 40 man. And then you've got on the other side of the ball, right, like you said, Brian Ramos is the only infielder left on the 40 man that's not in the bigs right now. Brian Ramos is not coming up anytime soon. Then it comes down to Zach DeLoach and Oscar Colas, right? Oscar Colas, the White Sox wanted in Charlotte for 2+ months. It became very clear to me at spring training that, like, the plan for him was to let him continue to work in Charlotte. Now, well, three guys go down in the first week of the season, you don't really have a choice. And he's hitting well, too. Like, you already brought up Sosa, who was the other guy that was, you know, ready per se, has big league experience, and has been playing well. So now you're in a spot where Colas is kind of the only option. But what I want to see personally, Danny, is just DFA some guys. Why is Brian Shaw on the roster? I mean, seriously, I get it. You need to fill out a bullpen, right? But I would way rather at least open a spot or two on the 40 man so you can add an Estrini, so you can add another infielder, even, you know, even bring back a Remillard, right, to the 40 man. There's a lot of different ways you can go, but right now you're in a situation where the 40 man is just so locked and tight. And I think ultimately, I do think Moncada's injury looked pretty serious, so it wouldn't shock me if he goes on the 60-day and then you open up a spot there for a Remillard or for a Mendick or something like that. So that I could also see being the option there if you kind of want another infield, outfield utility type of piece on the roster. But really, it's just the 40 man's a mess right now. It's not clean. It wasn't organized very well. It became apparent when you had to DFA a Popeye and you had to DFA Alex Spies, who are both, you know, both maybe going to be major league pieces this year, potentially at some point, right? And then both those guys now had to get DFA'd because why? Like, I don't, like, Brian Shaw, I mean, Dominic Leone, Brian Shaw, Tim Hill, like, that's why, really, ultimately. Those are the roster spots that are being clogged right now, and I just wish, it's not going to happen yet, but what I am waiting for is that flip to switch. When does the flip switch in, you know, June, July, where you just say, we're going to the youth. We're just going to turn it over. We're going to add 2-3 young players to the 40 man. We're going to add, you know, whatever. And we're just going to say, screw it with all these veteran guys that we brought in the offseason. Because at the end of the day, like, this team isn't going anywhere this year. We know that. And that's okay. Like, that we don't have to pout about that. But, like, let's try and figure out a way to get the 40 man in a better shape moving forward.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. But I, you know, having said all that, it leads me to a couple more questions. And I kind of have my own thoughts on this, yeah. But again, I want to refer to
you. I want to hear yours too.
We'll get there, but I want to refer to your level of expertise. And you say, you know, and I'm in full agreement here. Like, let's DFA some guys to make some room, because, you know, 40 man construction is, it's not just tight. I think it's kind of horrendous, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's showcased by a multitude of very cheap, bad offseason moves that they thought maybe we could get a handful of bullpen pitchers and maybe even some starting pitchers to kind of come in, because we knew this White Sox team needed to eat up some innings somewhere, right? And
yeah,
you know, the construction of the rotation here we are, we're 11 games into the season, we still don't really know who our fifth starter is, unless we're, you know, Clevenger. It's kind of mentioned that we're waiting on Mike Clevenger to be ready, you know, good old SP5. But in the meantime, you know, we're doing these bullpen games with a bullpen that's kind of already taxed a little bit. We see Pedro using guys in the wrong situations, maybe out of necessity, but then there's other times where you're scratching your head going, what, you know. But when you say you know, let's DFA a few guys and, you know, put some new guys on the 40 man, some of these youngsters, or even, you know, as you said, maybe Johan goes on the 60 day, who would you want to see be the next guy pulled up onto the 40 man? As far as we all know, I'm pretty sure you're probably going to say Nastrini for the pitchers.
Yeah.
But let's go with position players. Who's the first position player to minor leagues that you would want to see make his way onto the 40 man at this point?
It's honestly a good question. I got to think about that one. The position players are tough because there's a lot of guys who you want up this year, right? But you don't want them up now. Like, I mean, the obvious answer, right, is Colson Montgomery, right? Like, you want to see Colson Montgomery this year. And with all these injuries, like, there's clearly could be playing time for Montgomery if the opportunity presented itself. But at the same time, like, do you really want Montgomery up this early? I don't think so. He's the one player that I just refuse to want to rush. I think it doesn't do anything long term, but I think maybe Remillard is the most likely situation, just because I think he has the experience, or Mendick in that case. I think they kind of would serve the exact same role ultimately. I don't think you bring an outfielder up just because Colas and or Deloach is like a viable option, even if they're not necessarily fully ready, right? Like, those are options that are like that are worth it, you know. There's something there in terms of outfielders. So I think Remillard and Mendick are probably the most likely to. What I hate to see, you know, somebody pushed a little bit from that AA squad. I mean, Charlotte is not a great team. I think Charlotte, beyond Colson Montgomery and Nick Nastrini, is like, and Cannon as well, there's not a lot of guys you're like banking on part of the future right now in Charlotte. Most of those guys are in Winston and Birmingham right now. Would I hate to see a few different guys get pushed a little bit? Like, I wouldn't mind Tim Elko getting pushed a little. Do I? I mean, again, there's not really downside there, right? Like, I don't think he's ready, but at the same time, he's not necessarily a prospect, right? He's 25. I think he was drafted as a 24-year-old, right? So like, that player, you're not hitching your wagon on Tim Elko. So like, if Tim Elko has a good month in Birmingham, like, I wouldn't mind him just getting sent to Chicago or, you know, a brief stint in Charlotte and then whatever. Somebody just mentioned Brooks Baldwin, who I love, but needs more time. Definitely would love to see him in the future, but not yet. I mean, a Terrell Tatum, I could see being the type of guy that could get pushed a little bit. Another guy who's an older prospect, off to a hot start in Birmingham right now. He did struggle a little bit last year, but like, Tatum's a guy that like you could, his speed and defense would play immediately right now. So it's
exactly
like, if he doesn't hit, he doesn't hit. But like, at the least, Terrell Tatum mid to late season this year could be a very sound defensive, fast running outfielder for the White Sox, which is like I wouldn't hate that if Luis Robert's out and if, you know, Eloy's out, assuming those players are out for a while, right? I mean, that's kind of it. There's not a ton of great options, but all these guys I'm mentioning, right, there's plenty of guys that could be up later in the season that would fill those spots, and it's just going to come down to when they finally pull that trigger and clear, you know, 5 40-man spots, because there is a lot of guys that should be up later this season. Montgomery should be up later this season. Ramos already on the 40-man, but Ramos will have a shot to make the roster later this year. Same with Elko, same with Tatum potentially. You know, there's a lot of guys that will have a chance to make this roster later in the season. It's just a matter of when they decide to get the roster spots, right? I see a lot of people are interested in Tatum in the chat, which is cool, because I agree. He walks a ton, he's fast, and he plays good defense. Even if he doesn't hit, that's still more valuable than half the players in the White Sox right now.
Yeah, and, you know, so you asked me, or you said that you would like to hear my thoughts, yeah. And Tatum was one of the guys that actually came to mind to me, just specifically just for the simple fact that he kind of plays towards the philosophy of where this team wants to go,
right,
in the 2024 season. You know, I know that they said FAST is an acronym, you know, and we've all heard it, you know, fierce, aggressive, what was it? Technically sound or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is he does kind of bring, at least it feels like he brings what they want for this 2024 team right now. But I'd almost have to agree with you. I think guys like Mendick and Remillard, especially, you know, Remillard, I feel like can play third base in absence of Yoan Moncada. So if we do get that, excuse me, guys, I'm fighting something here today. I apologize. I feel like if Yoan goes on to 60 day, like we're both kind of thinking might be a possibility here, and we'll have to wait till tomorrow to see what, you know, the reevaluation shows on that adductor. But, you know, Remillard's a guy who's played a lot of third base, has done it at the MLB level for the White Sox in the past. You know, he's a little bit older, obviously, but has shown some grit and has shown some signs at times of a lively bat. He just needs to be a little bit more consistent with that, I think, and he could be a contributor. But the reality is like you said, there's a lot of guys on this team that we feel like could do something and be real contributors to this ball club. But the question is do we want to bring them up now? And the reason I got this heater going is because you brought up Colson Montgomery, and everybody and their brother is waiting to see this guy come up to the major league roster. But let's give him some time. I mean, he only had a handful of games at Charlotte last year, and I would typically like to think that you're at least going to get him 150 at bats or so down there before we even think about bringing him up. And I really want to see him get more, but
I agree.
You know, if injuries keep piling up, Pedro's hand is going to get forced, and I cannot wait to hear the comments that come from, actually I can, because I wish somebody would take a microphone away from this guy. Honestly, you know, Ian says in the chat that Mendick and Remillard are both off the 40-man now, and you'd have to make a roster move to bring them in. And I think that's basically kind of what we're getting at is, you know, there's going to come a time when 40-man moves are going to have to be made. You are not going to be able to maintain any kind of look of an MLB ball club. Not that they're really doing that well right now.
Yeah.
But you're not going to be able to do it with what remains on the 40-man currently. Again, if Yoan's down for any amount of time, they're going to have to make room for somebody.
Yeah, I want to jump in and address something Beefloaf just said, because this is one thing I wanted to mention earlier when we were talking kind of relievers, right? If you DFA the relievers, what happens? Because you do have to fill a bullpen somehow. My opinion and where I've been at with that in terms of this 40-man, I think this is an instant, like, clear up the 40-man to a degree. I don't think it fixes it. But in my opinion, you DFA two veteran relievers. I really don't care who. It can be Shaw, it can be Leon, it can be Tim Hill. I don't care. Two of those guys can go, right? And then in that situation, you open two 40-man spots where one can go to Nick Nastrini and one can go to some sort of infield offensive something, right? My logic there is that you bump Chris Flexen, assuming for now you can just put Nastrini in the five spot, right? When Mike Clevenger's back, you then bump Chris Flexen back to the bullpen. I don't need to see Chris Flexen start. He's been a reliever. He's been kind of that long reliever in the past. I don't know if they're going to do that immediately, But with those two spots from those relievers, you make flex in one of those bullpen arms, and then you can have a guy like Bailey Horn or Preland or Baroa, if he starts to have a few good games, take that other bullpen spot from there. At least it's somebody young, and then you have flex in as kind of that long guy in the bullpen, and then you have a rotation that features Nastrini and Clevinger when he's ready. That is my opinion on that. I'd see no reason for Nastrini to be sitting in AAA. You can say, you know, he struggled the last two games, whatever. I'm really just don't. That's just not a factor in my mind. He showed in spring training that he should be a big league starter right now. So if you get rid of some of those veteran relievers, you open up a situation where you can move flex into the bullpen. You can have Nastrini in the rotation, and there you go. You've opened up the roster situation too, where then assuming Moncada goes to the 60 day, right? That's even another roster spot as well. So, I mean, it's a little like it's tricky. I don't think it's exactly correct. But yeah, Flexen and Banks as the long guys, I'm fine with that. Right. I think that's perfectly fine. I think that works. You have a lefty, you have a righty, two guys that have been starters in the past that can work, you know, longer workloads if needed. So I don't know. Ultimately it could go many different ways, but that's how I see the most logical path to kind of clearing up the 40 man a little bit.
Yeah. And you know, there was another really good thing brought up here in the chat as well too, is we all know Davis Martin is down for some time, right? And the fact that he hasn't been put on the 60-day or, you know, and opened up a 40-man spot is kind of mind-boggling. That also would open up a 40-man spot for someone to kind of step up if needed. You know, and I'm not talking about opening up a 40-man spot and immediately bringing somebody up, but you got to have that availability for when these situations like tonight happen. You know, we all knew it's been talked about since the end of spring training, how Yoan Moncada doesn't look right. And, you know, there's been talk about soreness in that hip flexor. We saw it in the first inning tonight, actually, when he hit that ball down the right field line, I thought for sure he would be on second base. And he kind of leisurely just made the turn at first, which fine. You know, you're moving guys from first to third. There's already been a few runs across the, you know, the plate. You know, no reason that you put yourself in a situation where you're going to potentially get yourself thrown out. But Yoan Moncada, fully healthy, easily is on second base on that hit. And then we see him in his next at bat. I mean, just come up completely lame. Tough to watch. So, you know, when we get into these situations, having available 40-man spots and guys that are at least going to be, you know, ready, bags packed to come up to Chicago when needed is kind of something that you want to see. And this White Sox organization early on in the 2024 season seems to not have any real control over what they want to do. And it kind of makes you wonder if the front office is bumping heads. They can't come to an agreement on who they want where. I don't really know, but it's the roster management is maybe the worst poor. It's ever been.
Yeah. And it's even more clogged by the fact that you've got four guys on the 10 days right now. So that doesn't remove a 40 man spot. So, you know, when you get Brebbia and Luis and Eloy that all go down and go on the 10 day, in addition to Martin, who's not healthy, but not on the IL, right? That then, and Stassi as well, who's on the 10 day, right? So that's five spots there of guys who are not playing, but taking up 40 man spots. So then you're down to 35 players, which means there's only nine guys on the 40 man in the minors right now that are actually active. So it's just, it's messy. It's not clean. I mean, at this point, just put Luis on the 60 day. Like, really, are we seriously going to expect him back in 60 days? Because 6 to 8 week timeline, and we know dang well that, you know, he might try to come back and then he might get hurt again if he tries to come back too early. So it's the same, it's similar issues we've seen over the past few years that are, the organization's different. And I like the way the farm system's going right now, way more than the past, you know, 3+ years, right? But there's the same just organizational lack of clarity that we just continue to see with the White Sox that is just not going away. And that is why it's so frustrating to watch this team right now, because there's just, it's just messy. It's really just messy, and it's not going to be unmessy until that flip of the switch that I mentioned earlier happens, which won't happen for a while probably.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's kind of crazy that we're even sitting here talking about this right now. It doesn't leave you with a very good feeling about where the organization is. And I kind of wanted to just touch on it because I did have some feelings of like, you know what? We all knew this season was going to be bad, right? You know, I know I keep getting ripped for saying 74. You guys can, You guys can go ahead and beat me up on that. Again, I'm just going to put it out there. I feel just as dumb for saying it as you guys are trying to make me look. But, you know, I had been ripped recently about being too negative. Even Elijah, last time I had him on the show with Nick and I and Ian, kind of dug at me for being negative about Andrew Vaughn in one of my comments. You know, but you weren't the only one. I was getting dinged and donged and all over the place for being negative. And, you know, I tried to inject some positivity. I was trying to speak something into existence, and I picked a bad spot for it. But, you know, the reality is we're here. We know they're going to be bad. The thing about that is, though, is there is some building blocks for the future, right? Yes. We do have some young talent. And I don't want to poo-poo on them as far as, like, beyond 2024. But 2024 is going to be atrocious. So I put a tweet out last, you know, a few days ago. And it was a poll that I asked White Sox fans, do we think this team is going to be better or worse than the 03 Tigers? And I wanted to kind of pick your brain on that really quickly, because if you remember the 03 Tigers, I think it was, they were like, they had 38 wins until the last five games of the season, and then ripped off five straight somehow to bring them to like 42 or 43 wins overall. What are your thoughts on the White Sox offense right now? And do you think maybe with some of these guys going down and we get some youngsters coming up that are, you know, looking to make a name for themselves and play their way onto the roster full time. What do you think those numbers look like right now in comparison?
Yeah. I mean, it's rough. I don't think it's a 43 win team. I think it would be pretty crazy if it was a 43 win team. I think it's probably like a 60 win team. We'll see what happens. But it's, you know, it's not going to be pretty. The offense is going to struggle. It's going to be rough for a little while, for sure. It's definitely not going to be fun to watch. But at the same time, like, I do think there's some life being injected at some point in the near future, like you mentioned, right? Like, it's going to be a breath of fresh air when Colson Montgomery's on the roster. And even Oscar Colas, I think, could provide something. I think Lenin Sosa is going to do, you know, I'm excited to see Lenin Sosa over the next few months in a prominent role, especially with Moncada out. Sosa should be starting at third base, frankly, pretty much every day. I don't see why he wouldn't be, right? So, and even Shoemake, I've seen some things from Shoemake that I don't hate. So, you know, I think it's not pretty, right? It's not going to be pretty. 58 and 104 from Trey is probably not that off. It's probably pretty accurate, honestly. But at the same time, it's not 03 Tigers. I don't think it's a 43 win team. It'd be pretty sad if it was. I don't think so. But you never know, honestly. I mean, that team had I'm looking right now, that 03 Tigers had a 675 team OPS, which the White Sox are well below right now, I think. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's there's some players to watch, and there's players on the way. That's the biggest thing that I like to focus on, right? Like, I actually feel rather good about the future of the pitching in the organization, honestly. There's pitchers at every level of the minors right now that are legit major league prospects, in addition to, you know, Crochet looking like a stud. I think either Fetty or Soroka could kind of continue to improve this season. I can see both of them finding their groove a little more. I've seen some things from them that are encouraging. And then beyond that, right, a ton of guys in the minors who are really solid pitchers. So I think the pitching side of things is going to be the more fun thing to watch this season, even with some of those veteran relievers taking up innings right now. But the hitting is going to be rough for a little while. I won't lie. It's going to be a little shaky. But, you know, I think the 2025 hitting with Colson, with Brian, with Edgar Caro, eventually, there is some pieces on the way. It's just right now the offense is going to be bottom three in the league probably all season.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree. I hate to agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I like where your head's at, because honestly, it's true. But I hate to say it, because as a White Sox fan, you don't want to ever see that. But if this is what it takes to get us to a manageable payroll next season, for hopefully, because, you know, I'll be honest with you, I think Chris Getz is in over his head right now. He does have some really good people around him, and I'm really kind of hoping that, you know, as time goes on, you know, like Jerry said, he owed it to the fans to get this GM hunt done and over with quickly, because it's going to take somebody a year to figure it out, which I'll still never understand, because we're a year away from doing anything anyway, at least. But, you know, I would like to think that the White Sox are going to take those building blocks that they have and do some things. And then with the money that's left, you know, from some of these guys that are going to clear the books next year, go out and, right. and get us some competitive players. You know, do I expect to see the seven figure, you know, contract? Do I expect to see that, or whatever, nine figure contract or whatever it is you want to? I don't expect to see the $100,000 man just yet, or plus, yeah, or you know what I mean. Yeah. If that was the case, we could have had Bryce Harper years ago. They didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Manny Machado. There was plenty of opportunities. It's not that, but I think. I do think when you really take a look at the roster, though, you have spots that are very clearly like established.
I'm flipping off the chat here, guys.
You have spots that are clearly established for the future, at least for the short term, and to see what happens, right? So you've got a left side of the infield that's going to be Colson and Ramos next year, right? Like, it's pretty solidified that I think Colson Montgomery and Brian Ramos, I think, will be the opening day left side of the infield next year, right? And then beyond that, you know, hopefully you've got Luis Robert coming back healthy, right? I think maybe not opening day, but sooner than later, Edgar Caro is going to be the catcher, right? And Corey Lee hopefully will be that backup. Michael Turner's right behind him. There's some really good catching depth actually in the organization. So I know Maldonado and Stassi might suck right now and might be frustrating. Stassi hasn't even played, so we can't be mad at him quite yet. But at the same time, like, those are stopgaps, right? Like, Edgar Caro's coming. Michael Turner's behind him. There's decent. I mean, Calvin Harris, there's a lot of catching depth, right?
Yeah, and so can I jump in real quick? Yeah. So, sure. You know, as you talk about that catching depth, and this is one of the things that I've been seeing a lot of in the chat tonight that we haven't brought up is Maldonado. And we've got some stopgap guys, right? Because Caro is supposed to be the guy. He's going to be the starter of the future, at least right now, that's the way things look. And, you know, I hate to go back all the way to when we were talking about DFA guys, but how do you feel about Martin Maldonado? I know we talked about this a little bit before the show started. And I kind of wanted you to throw out there what you told me before the show. But I kind of said I'm on the bandwagon of, you know what, DFA Martin Maldonado for any bag of bones behind the dish right now. You know, until at least Max Cassidy gets healthy. You know, obviously Corey Lee, he's doing more offensively than Maldonado is. Right. And, you know, he got himself beat up pretty good behind the plate yesterday. He was chasing stuff around. He was getting a lot off the chest and the chin and the leg and the dirt. But, you know, defensively has not looked horrible. So what are your feelings on DFAing Martin Maldonado and getting rid of him since you brought up all the catching prospects that we have?
I think I'm in the minority here for the most part. I actually don't mind Maldonado being on this roster this season. I really don't. I get why people do. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to hit at all. He doesn't even look that great behind the plate. He's slow. He's pretty old. You know, there's a lot to not like there. But ultimately, the way I think of it, so when I was in Arizona, Danny, I was talking to, you know, a lot of the pitchers and just saying, you know, how is it working with two new catchers, right? Like, so a lot of these guys have never thrown to either Stassi or Maldonado before the spring. A lot of them were throwing to Caro and Corey Lee as well, who, you know, both just joined the organization last deadline, right? So there's a lot of new faces catching wise. Four guys that are the primary catchers, those catchers that were catching most of the spring training bullpens. And one common thing with the pitchers was, like, it's really cool working with a guy like Maldonado who's been doing this for so long. And I get that that doesn't translate to on-field stuff, but at the same time, I don't hate it. Catching's the one position where I'm not going to care what you're doing at the plate, really. And I don't even care if the defensive metrics look great. There's something to be said for a catcher that knows what they're doing and has been doing it for a heck of a long time. And there's no way to make this sound better to fans. I'm not going to try to make it sound better, but I can tell you that a lot of pitchers on this staff and in this organization have appreciated working with Maldonado over the past few months because he knows what he's doing and he has that experience where him talking to you throughout a game and his game planning can make a difference for some pitchers right now. So when you're at it, when you have a team that's going to be bad no matter what, and your catcher of the future and Edgar Caro is not ready, I'm fine with him being there. I really am fine with him being the piece there. And I also am fine with three catchers. I don't care. I don't mind Corey Lee staying as the DH when Stassi comes up because you're going to be without Eloy. Even who knows when Eloy will come back, right? I think there's there's a lot of reasons why Maldonado being on the roster is valuable. I think that it's just the situation where I don't mind him being there, and I don't mind him being there all season, to be honest. I really don't. I think there's a lot that this team can take from having Maldonado in the clubhouse throughout the year. He's not going to be there beyond the year. I think it's this season only, right? But with Edgar Caro not being an option, Edgar Caro just turned 21 this past week, right? Like, Edgar Caro is not going to be catching for the White Sox this season. I don't want people to think that's a possibility, because I really don't think it is. Next year, then you're looking at a guy who is a really advanced, talented catcher at 22 years old. That would be awesome to be starting a 22-year-old catcher for the White Sox, right? It's not going to happen this year. I really don't see a world where it happens this year. So let the guy that's been doing this for 15 years just teach Corey Lee and the pitching staff as much as he can. Cool. I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that $4 million, and I'm okay with him being on this roster, as bad as he might be for most of this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, some of the chat agrees with you on that. You know, Beefloaf mentioned
I also agree with the mention of him being not an everyday player. I very much agree with Clutch saying that in the chat. That's completely true. He should be on the roster, but I don't think he needs to play every day. That's a great point.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going to go, was, you know, having Martin Maldonado and his experience and his, you know, leadership in the clubhouse and being able to handle a pitching staff, all fantastic things. But that being said, you know, we're talking about a team that is offensively struggling at a rate that is just the worst we've ever seen on a White Sox team, at least in my lifetime. You know, right now, at least Corey Lee, you know, he's got only a couple of hits, but he is walking some of the time. He's even taken a base here and there that I wasn't, you know, exactly expecting him to do, you know, maybe going first to third or, you know, I think it was earlier today. He had a, DI, on the second base from first. Yeah. Was that, you know, so it's just nice to see somebody that is at least young enough to have the legs to move a little bit. Unlike, you know, Maldonado, who looks like he's been, you know, hanging out at Beefloaf's favorite pizza place over there at Punky's, you know, all day and all night. But, you know, there's a part of me that just wonders, as much as he's helping this young pitching staff, it was brought up a lot in the chat as well, too, his framing metrics are down over the last couple of years. And it kind of makes me wonder how the pitching staff is going to feel about that over time. You know, do we really need to have him catching these guys, you know, and only giving our backup every third or fourth day, as opposed to, you know, letting him go out there and just not be able to frame? And now we got pitchers that are getting up in counts, not just pitch counts, but in counts against guys where, you know, they're on the wrong side of the strike and ball count. So yeah, you know, I agree again with the idea of not having him be an everyday player, but keeping him on the team.
Yeah. And then the one thing I also, you know, Trey just asked this in the chat, but I want to mention this because this is a goofy idea by me, but, you know, Corey Lee started 6 games at third base and 5 games at first base in 2021, which was his last, you know, full extended season prior to moving to, you know, a full-time catcher DH combo. So sure, let's see. I mean, you know, right, if you're getting at bats for him, right, and you bring up, once Stassi comes back, for now I think it should be more of a half and half at catcher, right? Like you said, I think Maldonado doesn't need to start every day, but then when Maldonado is, you know, catching more often when Stassi comes back, right, and you've got three guys to rotate in at catcher, let's throw Corey Lee at first base once a week for Andrew Vaughn. Let's throw him at third base, maybe, if he feels like it. If they think there's a chance he can handle it, I that might be a hot take, heater, call it what you want. He played third base when he was coming up in college for a while, and then while he was in the minors in 2021, he played both the corner infield spots a little bit. So I don't know, play him at first once a week. Let Andrew Vaughn sit if he's not hitting. You know, maybe even play him at third once a week. Like, there's room to get him at bats in a way that you can figure out if he's going to be the backup catcher long term, or even the starting, whatever you want to say, right? I think Caro's going to be, I like Caro a lot more than I like Corey Lee, but I think Corey Lee is going to get the chance this season to show that he's a big league player. And that is something that, regardless of how he gets those at bats and those innings, like, make it happen, because why not?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I'm not, you know, I know he did play some of the corner infield spots. Yeah. I would feel a lot more comfortable with him playing first than I would third, especially, you know, even though Johan looks like he's going to be gone for a while. We do have a handful of guys that can man that position.
Right.
And, you know, are probably going to be a little bit more comfortable than somebody who hasn't done it in 3 years. But, you know, I think I'd have to see more out of him offensively before we even go down that path. He is showing signs of comfort, but he hasn't been, you know, exactly lighting it up. But he's doing more than any of the other catchers on the MLB club at this point. Obviously, Stassi is in his rehab assignment right now and just looks awful. You know, Maldonado, I mean, he's hitting like, what, 080 or something, 075 after tonight's game, whatever it is. He doesn't walk. He doesn't run. I mean, he looks, you know, he's a big
Grandal boy. Grandal
2.0. Oh, you know, there were times when Grandal looked, I mean, at least Grandal, again, I said this on last week's show, Grandal kind of looked smooth running down the base path, even though he wasn't going very fast. Maldonado doesn't, hey, you know, and I should say that when Grandal was healthy, he kind of looked smooth. But, you know, unfortunately, for the better part of the last 2 years, he wasn't very healthy very often. And, he didn't look great at all running. He looked like a chore more than anything. But, yeah, you know, the thing is, again, we have a long line of catchers now. We have more catching depth than we've ever had before. And I think
the most ever.
At some point, you're going to have to kind of look at what's going on with this team and say Grandal versus Maldonado in a foot race would be crazy. Thanks, Trey. But at some point you're going to have to kind of look at the benefits versus rewards. Unless Maldonado can find some sort of offense. Again, I'm in agreement with you that it doesn't matter what he does with the bat right now, but I think over time, once this pitching staff kind of gleams what it can from him, it's only a matter of time before they're gonna have to do something with him. You have to step up your game. You can't be hitting under 100 for the better part of a season and expect to stay in the major leagues. It unfortunate as it is, veteran or not, you know, teacher, mentor, doesn't really matter. In order to be able to be part of a major league ball club, you've got to hit better than, you know, 100 or lower. Anywho, you know, and I've seen some talk about Pedro and Jerry come up, which led me to my second heater. And I think it will bring us into our last little segment here today. You know, Pedro's quotes of the week. I mean, we have a few to dig from today, but I think I want to touch on, since it's kind of freshest in our mind, what were your thoughts on the eclipse yesterday, the great North American, you know, totality eclipse that went through Southern Illinois and, you know, Indianapolis and then right over Cleveland where the White Sox were playing yesterday. What do you think about Pedro's thoughts on that? And I'll pull up the exact quote here if you just give me a second, because I don't want to lead anybody down the wrong path here. I know we've probably all seen it at this point, but I'm just going to go ahead and read it off. So, when he was asked about it, I really apologize. He said, I'll see videos of it, but there's baseball. And he went on, I'm not going to watch it. It doesn't interest me that much. I'll watch videos of it to see what it looks like. I probably shouldn't say that because, you know, family and baseball. People don't believe it, but I believe it. I live it, and that's all that matters. What is your take on that quote? And, you know, by the way, we did end up learning later on that he, you know, he went down and actually saw the eclipse.
Of course he did. Right, of course he did.
So, way to walk that back. Way to stick to your guns. Yeah. But, anywho, family and baseball, brother.
I just don't care. I really don't care. I mean, I know that's not what you want to hear. I couldn't give less of a crap about what he's saying at this point. I truly do not. It doesn't matter. That's the reality. It doesn't matter. Is Pedro Grifol going to be coaching this team the next time they're in the playoffs? Answer me that, Danny.
No, absolutely not.
So why do I care? So why do I care? I mean, literally, then what is the point of this? There's constant talk.
Thank you.
This is my rant for the day. There's just constant negativity on White Sox social media and Twitter and everything of just everybody hating Pedro. I don't hate Pedro. I just don't care. That's where I'm at. I no longer have any sort of anger towards him. I don't care. I don't care what he says. I don't care what they're preaching, because it's not going to matter. It's just not going to matter. Right now, I'm more concerned with what the coaches are saying in Birmingham and Winston-Salem than what the coaches are saying with the White Sox, because this team is not going to be, it just doesn't matter, Danny. I just don't care. I don't, if he sees the eclipse or not, it doesn't matter to me. The eclipse talk was driving me crazy yesterday. It seemed really cool. I'm in California, so I didn't see any of it. It looked beautiful from all the pictures I saw. Cool. It's awesome. Whatever. If he saw it, awesome. If he didn't see it, cool. Which, whatever. He just needs to, I know he's going to keep talking. It's his job. He's going to have to explain himself every day. He does a press conference and he talks to the guys and all of that is fine. It just doesn't matter.
Cool. No, and I'm glad you said that, because I'm kind of, this is exactly why I picked this quote, because I kind of had a feeling I knew this is where you were going to go, just based on some of the things that I've seen and heard from you already. And you know, before we go on, I'm seeing in the chat now, if we can highlight that one, Colas is up per Francis Romero. Don't know if Ian is the source though. Ha 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 ha. Sorry. Anyhow, you know, Francis Romero, usually, you know, fairly reliable source on that. So if he says Oscar Colas is up, I'm going to go ahead and guess that that is fairly a reliable to go ahead and put it out there. So welcome. If that changes, I will go ahead and retract that statement on a Twitter post somewhere. But, you know, thank you for that update. Juki, I have not seen Juki in forever. How are you doing, brother? Welcome. So, yeah, you know, and I think a lot of people are kind of getting to the point now with Pedro's quotes of like, just take the microphone away from him. Yeah. Don't invest too much of your time and thoughts into it, because like you said, he's not going to be around forever. I mean, honestly, he might not make it through the next 2 months of the season with the way things are going right now. I don't know. I guess that's going to bring me up to my last quote of the night, and we can kind of finish up the show here.
Yeah.
So in a Sun Times article written by Joe Colley recently, there was a source recently said that Reinsdorf, who's also the chairman of the White Sox, if you didn't know, knew that manager Pedro Grifol had put in a fireable season by midsummer of 2023, but he wanted to wait at least a year so the dead money wasn't a big hit. So, my friends, Pedro being here for, whether it's the rest of 24 or if it happens before the end of the 2024 season, he's not going to be here forever. But I also want to know, I wanted to pick your brain on that too. Like, how do you feel about, and I'm pretty sure your answer is going to be nearly the same. I already know where it's going to go, but I just wanted to kind of get to, how do you feel about Jerry saying something along the lines of he knew that he probably should have Pedro, or he could have fired Pedro,
right,
but didn't.
Yeah, it's no surprise. It doesn't surprise me at all. And what I'll say, instead of saying I don't care, because I don't care, but what I'll take it a different direction and say, I hope that that at least means some of that money that he's saving can go to free agency, right? That would be the hope, right? I don't know if that's going to be the reality, but the hope is, in my mind,
a better manager in the future. Well,
that would be great too. But in general, right? Like, it's, save all the money you want. Let's see that, because you're getting Yoan off the books. You're getting Eloy off the books. You're getting a variety of the pitchers, especially the veteran guys, off the books. And you're going to then save, you know, a few million dollars on Pedro from not getting rid of him last year, right? So there's going to be some money. So the direction I would take that is that I want to see them spend some money, because it's just not, you're not going to get this next young core that I do really like this next young core of prospects, but you're not going to do anything with it if you do the same thing as last time, which is fail to produce other and to fail to bring in other talent to supplement the young guys, right? Like, you need to figure out, you don't do that once the young guys start performing. You do that before you even have to see the young guys perform, right? So this coming off season, right, when you're going into 2025 with Coulson in your everyday lineup and Ramos in your everyday lineup and Caro coming soon and Nestrini and Drew Thorpe and Cannon and all these other guys that I expect to be a significant part of the 2025 core, supplement them. Do not wait to supplement them until after, when they already, you can't go into 2025, even if 2025 is not a competing year, you can't go into 25 without at least a few significant signings or trades to supplement the young core, because next year's roster is going to be way younger than this year's, right? Like, there's not going to be as many stopgaps. There might be some, but there's going to be way less stopgaps and way more rookies who you're hoping that will produce, right? But you can't go in with that roster of primarily rookies and not supplement it in the free agency. So I took that a totally different direction than Pedro. I apologize for that. But my hope one of Jerry's many moves to save money, because that's ultimately what he does all the time, right? Let's see that result in free agency after this season, please.
Yeah, I I'll agree with, first of all, I'm going to address a couple of the comments here in the chat. Juki coming in here to gloat about the KC sweeping the White Sox. I'm just going to go ahead and say, Juki, you know, that's an awesome hill for you to die on there. Cause it's not really a win, brother. Like, you're talking about sweeping the worst team currently in baseball. You know, good for you, buddy. I'm glad it makes you feel better, but, and I miss you. I do. Cause, you know, Juki was always a staple in our streams in the past with Ian. But you know, did you really have to, you really got to, you know, throw salt on the wound? We're bad, dude. It's not that big of a W. You know, when you sweep the Braves, let me know. All right. You can come in here and gloat all you want. The other thing I wanted to, address really quick here too, is Trey says they're clearly operating on a super rigid payroll right now based on how they operate the 40 man. And I think we kind of all knew that going into the season. We had looked at the off season signings, guys like Tim Hill, he was signed in December. You know, we were months away from crunch time, and we saw a 35, 36 year old pitcher getting signed, you know, for nickels basically to, fill in a roster spot in the bullpen, where we already know that the White Sox produce bullpen arms in their farm system. It's the one place that you can't really say development hasn't worked out for the White Sox.
Yeah.
You know, we can point at development issues everywhere else in the organization, but bullpen arms are not one of those places. So we kind of knew that they were going to operate on that kind of rigid payroll this year. And the idea is, I think, and they weren't really secretive about it either. Yeah. You know, the idea is to get through this season, wait for some money to come off the books, and hopefully do something to improve in 2025.
So what I want to, building on that, right, I just pulled up the payroll because I was curious, so I won't go too long with it, but right, like, you've got $25 million Moncada off the books. Eloy's making 14 this year with a 16.5 option next year off the books, right? Stassi with a club option at 7.5, Maldonado with a club option at 4, at least one, if not both of those off the books. Beyond that, the only contracts on the books, and then John Brebbia with a $6 million option, maybe if he has a great season in the bullpen that gets picked up, but like, maybe, right? So the only contracts other than arbitration guys, right? Like, I know I'm hoping that Garrett Crochet will be in for a big raise in arbitration. You know, Kopech might get a raise even if he really produces as a closer. But generally speaking,
if he's not traded contracts, by the
deadline. Right, exactly. The only contracts on the books going into next season of any substance are Benintendi at $17 million, whatever, Luis Robert at $15 million, Eric Fetty at $7.5 million. And that's literally it, other than guys in arbitration and guys that you could end up cutting, a bunch of guys that could get DFA'd, guys that might get picked up or re-signed. But that's it. There's three legitimate, 100% guaranteed major league contracts going into next season. So this team should have some money. And like I said, Coulson, Ramos, Caro, Nestrini, Cannon, Thorpe, those are all players that will be on the roster that will be in their first year of pre-arb, right? So this is a team that will have a lot of money and a lot of young players, hypothetically, to put together a decent roster. Absolutely. I get it. This year is going to be ugly. But like, going into the offseason, right, sign a starter that you know will be a legit starter. sign somebody to play second base, if none of Shoemake, Sosa, et cetera, step up this year and really show they're the future there, sign a second baseman. Let's fill a position that we haven't filled for the last decade, right? Right field, even. If Colas or Dominic Fletcher take a big step, awesome. I would love for that to happen. If they don't, sign the first right fielder that's worth watching since Jermaine Dye. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility with this payroll going into next season. Jerry and the organization as a whole just has to be willing to put something forward and make some things happen.
Right. And the great thing about that is you can throw some money around and still stay under exactly. $150 million.
Yeah, for sure.
And be able to fill out a roster that looks well above the competitive rate we're at right now.
Yep.
100%. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people are ready to sell this team out. It's going to be forever and a day before. No, it's not. You know, here's the thing. Yeah. Are they in a – this is not just a retool. Let's be honest. Call it what it is. It's a rebuild. But it's not going to be a five-year
rebuild. It's not at all.
We're looking at a two-year rebuild with the possibility of the third year maybe being competitive in the Central, especially if the White Sox are going to be as young as we all think they're going to be.
Yeah.
And we should be able to compete with the Tigers and the Guardians of the Central at the very least. Yeah. And things could get interesting, you know, in the following years to where, you know, who knows? I don't want to go and put myself out there. I've done too much of that already this season. But let's just say we could be watching a team that we can be at least proud to say we're White Sox fans of, because it's very difficult to do these days.
And like, so, you know, there's going to be guys out there. That's what I'm saying. Now they're building on that again. Like, there's some free agents that could really fit this roster. If Andrew Vaughn's not the option, there's a bunch of first basemen next year. You've got Pete Alonso. You've got Paul Goldschmidt. You've got Rhys Hoskins. There's a Christian Walker. There's tons of guys out there at that spot. Gleyber Torres, Brandon Lau at second base, Ha-Seong Kim. There's a lot of free agents that are going to be available and positions of need, right? So let's take this young core and let's supplement it with some significant additions. I'm not talking one-year veteran deals. I'm talking five-year deals to some legit quality players. There's a world where this team, this is me being somewhat overly positive maybe, right? But I try to stay positive as much as I can. There's a world where this team pushes for the division next year. And there's a world where this team in 2026, 27 is legitimately good. I'm not saying that's going to happen. There's a world where they also continue to struggle. But there is enough of a young core and enough payroll flexibility for things to be a lot better after this season. We're just going to have to get through it right now. We're going to have to enjoy the young players that are coming up slowly throughout the season. And from there, we'll see, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to take a moment to thank you for keeping your positive attitude. I generally
do my best.
I try to stay positive and then, you know, like I said, I'm not paying as much attention to the chat tonight as I normally do, because these guys, they know my triggers, man. They know my triggers. They know how to get me going. It's easy. I'm working on not being as negative as I possibly could be.
You're doing good.
Yeah, you know, this is therapy for me. I say this to any one of my other co-hosts. I want to thank you for allowing me to vent with you when I needed to vent. And I also want to thank you for your positivity tonight. Elijah, why don't you go ahead and tell us about your show on Future Sox and where everybody can find you? And,
yeah,
we'll wrap it up here, bud.
Yeah, you can check me out at ElijahEV8 on Twitter. Me and Jeff Cohen do the roundup every week on Future Sox, which is all minor league focused. So we do nothing but just talk about the guys who are performing, the guys who are struggling, all of the above in the minors. This week, we talked about a bunch of guys who had a really good first weekend of the minor league season. And then in addition to that, I am going to continue to do interviews. I've done a bunch of player interviews. I had a really fun one with Nick Nastrini and Jordan Leisure right before the season started. I'm talking to Sean Burke this week, just a bunch of other guys hopefully coming up. I will continue to do all of that all season. So definitely stay tuned with me, stay tuned with Danny, with Ian, with James, Jeff, all the Future Sox guys, Nick, of course. We are just going to do the best we can to provide you insight on the future of this club, because like I said, there's some upside. There's some things I like in the future. So thanks for having me, Danny. I really appreciate it. It was fun getting to talk some
major league stuff. Thank you very much for being here. I really do appreciate you filling in for Nick. One last thing I wanted to announce is recently, you know, here at Future Sox, we are continuing to do some new things and bring in some new people. Some of you might remember Chicago White Sox Daily, Xavier Sanchez. has now joined the team. He'll be doing some blogging for us. He'll be getting to work here shortly. So we want to welcome Xavier to Future Socks. And as we wrap it up here, I just want to remind everybody, you can find us, myself and Nick should probably be back next week, every Tuesday night here on YouTube and Twitch, Hot Takes and Heaters. You can find us on X at Future Socks, on the interwebs at www.futuresocks.net. You find all our podcasts where you get your podcasts, all your live streams here on YouTube. I want to thank everybody for coming in tonight. My name is Danny Miller. For my co-host, Elijah Evans, you all have a wonderful evening. We'll see you next Tuesday. Good night.